Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. This is the 11th talk of this range retreat. It's an extra one, usually only give 10. And the range retreat is coming to a close. And each one of you who have been here, that many of you are staying on, some of you are going back to your homelands. These things pass away so quickly. And the reflection of things passing away should always give us a sense of urgency and also a sense of renunciation. Doesn't matter what one delights in the world, whether it's physical things or just situations, they never last. And as such, so we can't hold on to anything in this world whatsoever. And you can't hold on to the delight in staying at a monastery. Those of you who are permanent residents, you're not really permanent. Because you never know what might happen next when you leave, when you have to go, when the monastery closes down or whatever, or when you die. And just that sense of just a lack of stability, a lack of certainty, should give you a sense of urgency, sometimes a sense of fear as well. But a fear which is, as I was mentioning last week, the positive fears which undermine the laziness, undermine the sense of indulgence in the moment, thinking that everything's okay and it'll always be okay. There is a task to be done. For that task, each one of you has done your best to try and achieve that task, to do as much as you possibly could in this range retreat. And many of you have found out the journey is never as you expect. It sounds also easy when you read these books. Just all you need to do is keep the precepts, sit down, watch the breath, get nimittas, get jhanas, see the ending of all things. And in no long time, you become one of the arahats. Sounds so easy, but the reality of your lives is that there's many obstacles in the way, many defilements in the way, and they take a while to wear down. But it doesn't really matter just that they may still be there. The point is, in the last 3 months, you have worn them away to a certain degree. And you reflect upon that. You reflect that whenever you have expectations of what you want to achieve, whenever you have these goals which you set, which you have to meet, all you're doing is setting yourself up for more suffering. And at the very least, at the end of a retreat, just like at the end of one's meditation, it's always a time, above all, to reflect, to look back, to see what worked, see what didn't work. And to use the whole experience as an opportunity for developing one's wisdom even more. In the same way that I've been advising for so many years now, at the end of every meditation, the last couple of minutes, to look back, how do I feel? Why do I feel this way? What did I do? What didn't I do? What worked? What didn't work? In order that you never waste any meditation. And that way there's no such thing as a good or bad meditation. The good meditation is where you're having a great time. The bad meditation, so-called, is where you learn. You learn from the mistakes, what doesn't work. The wise person is the one who does that reflection at the end of every meditation. Because they learn very quickly that way. The one who is not so wise forgets. At the end of the meditation, if it was a great meditation, they never stop to think why or reflect why. And that way they miss all the clues of what works. When they have a difficult meditation, they don't reflect why. That means they have to keep repeating the mistakes again and again and again. We use this power of investigation. In Buddhism we call it vimamsa, or sometimes, you know, Dhamma Vicaya. There's so many words for this looking back and seeing what happened, and trying to find out the cause and effect relationships. And not only does that really enhance your meditation, if you make that a habit, it also enhances the quality of your retreats, whether personal 2-week retreats or 3-month rainy season retreats. This is the time to start doing that. You look back, why, what happened? And this is where one really gains the insights. Especially as a time when you have had the opportunity for silence, where you've developed a more aloneness during this special time. And I've mentioned to you this before, the less you do, the less you get involved, the less you talk, the more mental energy you gain. And that mental energy, that brightness, gives you the power to investigate. People who are very busy, who waste their time talking, running about, doing things when they don't really need to, are the ones who waste that energy. And so even in reflection, you look back, you can't really see clearly why, what happened. The mind is not bright enough, and it's not still enough. You all know that reflection which I very often use, because it's a great one, of walking up the hill to this monastery from down below. If you haven't tried that yet, you may actually go down and walk up and down the hill. For those of you who've always been up and down in a car, and test it out for yourself. It's amazing that when you go slower, you see more. When you stop, you see everything. That's the same with the mind. The more you do, the faster you go, the less you understand. And so this is a time, at the end of a retreat, because many of you have slowed down. Some of you at the slowest you may have ever been in your life. This is the time when the mind is bright, stable, and able to see things. So you reflect back on so many things. You can reflect back upon things like expectations. And every time you've had an expectation during this period of 3-month retreat, every time you said, right, this is my personal retreat, this is really going to put forth effort today, every time you've had expectations like that, you've seen you've been putting a big burden in front of you. As a teacher, when people come and tell me their experiences, it is just so obvious that when people say they've had their greatest experience in meditation, it was in the times when they least expected it. And that is such a common story which people tell me, that I keep on emphasizing and repeating it, that when you don't expect things to happen, then you are not putting your mindfulness into the future. You're not sending the mind away from the moment. You don't expect anything, so you don't look for anything. All you do is stay with what you have. And that staying with what you have, in that non-doing, in that non-desiring, non-aversion, there is an opportunity for stillness to build up and to see this moment as it is, and to go deeper into it. It's the expectations which take your mind away from the moment. And I mention this because sometimes people start a retreat despite all the things which the Buddha says, with these great expectations, what they want to achieve in this retreat. And by this time some people get disappointed and frustrated. If you do get disappointed and frustrated with your supposed progress, it's not the cause, because you've been lazy or there's something wrong with you. The cause of frustration is just the expectations. The disappointments come because you wanted something. And this is a constant message which does not just apply to the progress of a person during a retreat. It also applies to progress in even the monastic life. Sometimes that some of you are looking back 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, what I've been doing in this monastery, how are things going? If you have expectations and these external goals, again, you're missing the point. The whole idea of this monastic life is to let go of such things, to be at peace in the moment, whatever that moment is, to be able to be content in this moment and not have all these intellectual assessments. It's so hard to judge progress. In the classic story in the suttas, as you all know, is a big water jar, taller than a man's height, and all you can see is just drops of water dripping in. And you haven't got a clue, you don't know how full that water jar is or how empty it is. You don't know when one more drop of water will make the whole water jar overflow, or whether you've got to wait for another 10,000 lifetimes before that overflows. It's a great simile because it just shows just how difficult it is to assess one's own progress. Just like I was telling a few people during the interviews, that sitting up in the dining area where I usually conduct most of the interviews, looking out of that window for maybe about 12 years now in the upper story, or 10 years or something. I remember when we first built that upper story, I could look out and see the hill and see the lake. Now I can't see any of that. The trees have grown. It's only by such comparisons that I know there has been some growth in the forest. Because you live here all the time, you can only see. Or you can't see, just the incremental, slight growth, day by day. It's the same way with a person's progress on the path. Sometimes it's hard to understand how much one has grown. But soon that one will be either going out of this monastery, either back to a home, or you'll be travelling, or going to Nolamara, or going to dentist, or whatever. You'll find out that that's a time when you can actually see that there's been changes. Changes have happened because it's the nature of this path. The longer one stays in a monastery such as this, the longer one hears such teachings and gets brainwashed, if you like, the more you meditate, the more you stay by yourself, then something does happen to everybody. What happens is a more peaceful, powerful, intuitive, wise mind. It's just the way that wisdom grows. It grows with peace. And if you've been cultivating peace, you've been cultivating wisdom. And as that grows little by little, that you can get this snowball effect. When you start, because the mind is restless, you don't have much power, so you can't see the causes of restlessness. But as the mind gets more peaceful, it gets more alert and sees more deep, then you can see more of the obstacles and you can overcome them. And that makes the mind even more still, and the wisdom gets more powerful. As the wisdom gets more powerful, you are empowered to get a more peaceful mind. As you get a more peaceful mind, you can see even deeper into the nature of your mind. And then the insight gets even greater. This samatha vipassana, the peace and the insight, always dance deeper and deeper around each other, getting closer and closer to the truth. This is what we need to do. We have the confidence that this path actually works, as you do gain deeper insight and greater peace. I know that sometimes that people wanted to test their progress by their wisdom, but I prefer to test people's progress by their peace. Because I've seen too many people in the world, they go up on even on a seat such as this, or they write books, and they say all these supposedly wise things. And sometimes what they say does make sense according to the suttas. Sometimes it can be inspiring. But it's never the sign of wisdom. You can give a great talk, but then not really understand what you're talking about. And it reminds me of when I first went to Cambridge University and joined the Buddhist Society there. I just remember just going up and saying, I want to join. He said, you don't have to. You don't force people to join a Buddhist society. I said, look, I'm a Buddhist. I want to join. He said, but no, you can pay later. Listen, mate, I want to join now. Here's the money. I had to force the money on the treasurer because he didn't realize that I was already a Buddhist and very committed, even at 18. I remember just the first talks which I listened to were very, very inspiring. It was by a Thai monk who was a Chalkun, who spoke perfect English, which was a very rare thing that 1969, I think it was. And after his third talk, I was so inspired. And I wonder, waiting for the fourth talk. And the fourth talk, he never appeared. When I asked why, it was because 3 days ago, he'd married an English girl. And that was tough for your faith. To be inspired by this amazing Dhamma talk in perfect English by a Chalkun, and then find out that throughout the whole time he was talking like that, he was obviously planning his marriage. And it just showed me that you can talk high Dhamma, but that's no guarantee that you really understand what you're talking about. Much greater indicator of a person's progress is their degree of peace, their contentment. That's why you understand a person's level of vipassana or insight by how peaceful they are. You understand how peaceful a person is by how deeply they see. Seeing deeper than the books, because they're seeing from their own experience. And this is such a wonderful thing to be a part of. This progress of peace and wisdom, ever supporting each other, going deeper and deeper, closer to Nibbana. As you get more peaceful, you just see much more. And you start to see just the stupid problems of human beings, always thinking that happiness lies in the next experience. You see that just the way that people live in the world, full of hope. As Ajahn Chah called it, like searching for the tortoise with a moustache. You spend your whole life searching for the tortoise with a moustache, the beautiful girl, if you're a boy, the beautiful boy, if you're a girl, or if you're gay, whatever, I don't care. But the point is, it's the same thing, just looking for the next bit of entertainment. And you can see that in the world, just how it drives people. And you can sometimes see that in your own mind. Just hanging out for the next time we have noodles in the morning. Hanging out for the time when you can go overseas, when you can see your friends. Just hanging out for the next time at the coffee club. I just recall my own experiences of thinking about your favorite food, fish and chips, and the time when I actually got fish and chips for the first time. And all of that time you were just wanting that, the reality was far different. The real experience was just, why have I wasted so much time on stupid desires? That's what it's like. In the fantasy, the tortoise hasn't got a moustache. In fantasy you can make a tortoise with a moustache, but in real life there's no such thing. And so often people are searching for things which do not exist, and that becomes the meaning of most people's lives. And you come to this monastery and you look for something which is more important. You say Nibbana, jhanas, or whatever else you are aiming for. But so many people, they haven't got a clue what Nibbana is. And jhanas, they hear it described, but still it's not a personal experience. And so what they do is end up looking for the tortoise with a moustache. Just a more refined idea of Nibbana or idea of jhana. That's not jhana, that's not Nibbana. You only find these things, these highest of truths, in deep stillness. when the mind isn't going looking for things, when it doesn't want anything. It's always found in the deepest perfection of contentment. Sometimes that seems like an oxymoron, the perfection of contentment. Because whenever you want things to be perfect, then you are never content. You look at this monastery, and it's far from perfect. You look at me, I am far from perfect. You look at your practice, it is a long way from perfect. So how ever can you be content? And this is a beautiful part of the Dhamma. That sort of ideal perfection is never attainable. After a while you give up. I don't mean you leave the monastery. I don't mean you stop effort. I don't mean you just end up just drinking coffee, hang out with your mates, sleeping all day. That's not giving up. That's indulging. Giving up means you just let go of craving, of desire, of wanting, of this worldly idea of perfection, thinking that enlightenment is the tortoise with the moustache, or the tortoise with the bright nimitta on its face, the jhanas, I don't care what you call it. Those things don't exist. But what does exist is in the contentment of being in this moment, giving up desire, giving up wanting, giving up all the unwise comparisons, good and bad, nice meditation, bad meditation. Basically, you don't know what you're talking about. So stop judging. The same way you don't judge anyone in this monastery. You just don't know them enough. You can't know them enough. You can't encompass their minds with your mind to actually know why they do things, who they are, what they mean. It's hard enough to know your own mind without judging another person's mind. So you stop all this judging business. You don't even judge your progress. Good meditation, good retreat, bad retreat. You stop this idea of worldly perfection. Instead, perfection becomes the ending of craving, the ending of desire, the ending of nama rupa, just where earth, air, fire and water find no more footing, where hot and cold just do not exist, where good and bad disappear. Those sorts of places are where you incline towards. And those places you incline towards are always the places where things disappear. Which is why Ajahn Chah would always say, you do not come to a monastery such as this to get something, to attain something. You come here to abandon things, to let things go, to disappear. If you come here to attain things, you will always go home disappointed, frustrated, even disillusioned. If that's what you come here for, if you come here to say, I want to get jhana, I haven't got jhana yet, therefore I want my money back. And actually a couple of years ago someone did that. So a guy came from America, and as soon as he arrived here, he heard about my reputation, wanted to do jhanas, so he gave a big donation, about $3,000 or $4,000 US, and about 2 weeks before he went, he asked for the money back. Well, at least most of it anyway. He left a little bit for paying electricity, because he never got his jhanas. He had no choice, he had to give it to him. So it's a crazy thing. The guy came here wanting things. And of course he left, sort of, without getting what he wanted. Now that's not the way of practice. And look for that when you are meditating, when you are walking, just even when you go to sleep. every time you want something, you're encouraging craving, and the craving is encouraging the control freak inside of you. You're building up your sense of self, and the more that self exists and craves, the more suffering you will get. This is a cause of the suffering. So you reflect back on the whole retreat. Every time I've really wanted something, that I've just created the causes for disappointment, frustration, and dukkha. It's all come from a sense of self. I wanted a me, getting my scout badges. And all that does is create a stronger self, which means more dukkha. So this path of Buddhism is a way not of attaining, but of seeing how much disappears. So this end of this retreat, you just look how much has disappeared. What things you've abandoned during these 3 months. Whether it's stupid ideas, micchaditti, wrong ideas, whether it's cravings, wrong perceptions, or whatever. And what you've abandoned, that's what you should be happy with. What you've attained, be very careful of. That is dangerous. It's like a tiger. It will bite you and eat you up and create you more suffering. What you've abandoned is what you look for. So see how much has disappeared over the last 3 months. And when you get the idea of the path of peace, the path of wisdom, the path of the Eightfold Path, is the greatest disappearing act in samsara. It's a vanishing act. It's an act of renunciation, where more and more things just disappear. Then you have the idea what the goal truly is. The goal is extinction. Nibbana, cessation, nirodha, through the path of gradually fading away, viraga. So you look at what has faded away in the last 3 months. And that's a sign of how much you've understood. That's why in the standard description of the Aryas, things such as personality view, doubt, and what's the other one, belief in the efficacy of rites and rituals, all those things fade away. Until they're not left anymore. You look and see there's no way can I ever think of a sense of self in here. All this body, this mind, it's just 5 khandhas, 6 sense bases, that's all it is. Consciousness and its objects turning around each other. Just on fire, as a fire sermon said a few moments ago. That's all there is. And whatever you experience during the day, if you listen to a joke, and you're laughing uproariously. It's not me laughing. It's not my joke. It's just the 5 khandhas in the funny mode. If you get really disappointed and fed up with yourself, all it is 5 khandhas in the desperate mode. But you never look upon this as me. It's not my problem. It's not a personal calamity. When you understand that, life gets so easy. Of course, you have moments when you understand that, and it feels just so liberating. When you disappear and fade away, life is so easy. You reflect back, you understand the cause of the problem, it's me. I. That's why the Buddha said, I don't contend with the world, because there's no one I. Me in here, the world contends with these 5 khandhas, gives them suffering. That's how I understand that meaning. When you disappear, the more you disappear, there's nothing to do the contending anymore. No controller, no fighter. No one who gets disappointed, frustrated, desperate, no one with doubt, no one with anything. You disappear. So you see just how much fades away. You can see just how these different ways of approaching the Dhamma, the fading away the sense of self, letting go of controlling, of will, of doing, just disappearing, fading away, opening the door of your heart to the moment, which means no controlling. All of those things are different expressions of the same path, of fading away of me, fading away of the possessions which define me. It's one of the favorite sayings which I have from the Buddha. When I first read it, it really stuck immediately. It said, when there's a self, there will be possessions of the self. When there's possessions of a self, you'll always find a self in there somewhere. It's possessions. What do you own? What do you think is yours? That gives you an indication of a self. And when you have an ownership, because of the laws of impermanence, things come, they go, they break down, they disappear, it will always lead to suffering. Fear is when you see things being taken away from you. It's a sign that you don't own things. It is the little kid in the pram and someone's taken away his ice cream. That's fear. You're losing your attachments, or they're threatened. This is what happens. It's a cause of suffering. I don't want to let go. It's mine. But as you develop this practice more and more, you find that the sense of self disappears, and with it your sense of ownership. It's another way we can find out what people's progress is. Not just by how peaceful they are, by how much they fade away, but how few possessions they have. Just to see just how little they need. That shows they've got very little sense of self. You are almost measured by your possessions. First of all, by your physical possessions, by your body possessions, your health, your beauty, or whatever else you really attach to as your body. And lastly, of course, by your reputation, your mental possessions. It's great being a monk. Sometimes people you think you are like a god. Sometimes they think you're like this lazy bludger who should get a proper job. And it's great to have all types of responses. I remember just when I visited England some years ago, and I went to stay with a relation who lived in the Midlands of England, in the town of Stoke-on-Trent. One morning, because, you know, you want to have a walk, and at the same time it was an opportunity to spend time with my cousin, we went for a walk through the streets of Stoke-on-Trent. And as I was walking, everybody was pointing to me and laughing. It was a great test. You know, I was wearing my robes, I always have to. It was like you're being humiliated. And of course you just took it, and just, you know, it's a nice practice, people pointing at you and laughing at you in this, you know, straight English town. And then I realized after about half an hour why they were pointing at me and laughing at me, when I saw the advertisement for the circus which was in town. And they all thought I was one of the clowns. So I was actually, afterwards, I was quite happy because I made people enjoy themselves. It wasn't personal, it's just they see a clown, you laugh at them, you point to them. So just because they didn't realize what a Buddhist monk was, they didn't know the difference between a Buddhist monk and a clown in a circus. But some people get really upset at that. They think, you're laughing at me, you've got no right to laugh at me. And they sometimes get very upset. And that's a sign that you're holding on to something. You've got a sense of self. It becomes a possession, your reputation. You know what it's like sometimes. You know, I'm supposed to be a famous monk, and sometimes you make a complete idiot of yourself. And are very stupid, say something ridiculous. And that's a great thing for you to be ridiculed. When they ridicule you, they're not ridiculing you, they're ridiculing your five khandhas in their dummy mode. And next time, next week, you give a brilliant talk and people think you're completely enlightened, the most enlightened person ever since the Buddha. And then you're in your brilliant mood. But it's not a possession of yours anymore. The more you possess these things, the more suffering you will have. If you think you've got the reputation of the best meditator in this monastery because you've had a jhana before, be careful. If that's your possession, then you stop the possibility of it repeating. You know what that is like? You've had it once, you want it again. You possess the experience. That's why you can't fade away enough to repeat it. Have nothing. See how much you can let go. You don't define yourself by your personal experiences so far, or your failures so far. Do you understand how free it is to have nothing? Whatever you did in the past, the most brilliant or the most stupid, you've completely let it go, you've forgiven yourself. You've forgiven yourself not just your faults, you forgive yourself your successes as well. None of them belong to you. That way you're completely free and empty. You don't define and make yourself. The idea, the sense of self, is almost like a karmic creation of all your past experiences. Mix them all together and there you are, me. What a stupid thing that is to do. If you make that me, then all the bad karma of the past will send you down to the lower realms when you die. If you make that me. If you don't make a me, there's no lower realms for you at all. If you don't really make a me, there's no samsara left for you. So it's how much you can fade away, how much you can disappear, how much you can just vanish. That's why one of the descriptions of the arahat, which we mentioned in the Word of the Buddha class in the last time, which also happens to be the surname of one of the Anagarikas here, Santa Muni. Santa means the peaceful. And Muni means the wise one. The peaceful wise one, or the silent wise one. The person who hardly speaks, who makes no noise, who just floats through this monastery just like a wisp of cloud in the early morning after a heavy rain. They've just got no substance to them. You can punch that cloud or that mist and your hand goes straight through. You can call them any name, a bastard or whatever, and it just goes straight through them and nothing sticks. That's a silent stage. There's nothing there to receive the abuse, pain, pleasure in the body, nothing sticks. This is what we mean by the silent stage who is disappearing. You disappear, your solidity starts to weaken, you become more fluid, like a liquid, like going from the solid element to the water element. That water element is fluid because it can adapt to the container in which it is put, unlike solids. In the same way, you can adapt to the situation you find yourself in. That's what I have to do. Go to all these different talks, and I have to adapt and put on a different hat no matter what I'm doing. You just adapt, you flow into that role when you're doing a talk for nurses and midwives, or one of the talks which I've got myself roped into in a couple of weeks' time is on the Centre for Water Research at UWA. I don't know why they invited me and what I'm going to talk about. I don't know much about water unless it's got tea in it. But nevertheless, I'll think of something. So you just adapt to the situation. And when you're liquid like that, because you haven't got a solid self, a solid ego, then it's so easy. But then you go even further than that, just go from the liquid element to the air element. So you just disappear even more. Not just you can flow, but you know, people poke you, and there's no resistance at all. There's no resistance to the flow of events in life. You're sick, you don't resist it. You allow sickness to do what it needs to do. Now, the past week I had a cold. So I just have to sleep a lot, or sleep more than usual. You don't resist that and say, I'm going to fight this cold. I am better than this cold. I'm going to use the power of my mind. I'm going to clench my teeth. And I'm going to sit even though my nose is dripping and oozing all over my robe. That's ego stuff. That's nothing to do with Buddhism. You just disappear. And the more you disappear, just the quicker these things disappear with you. You don't use the controller, the control freak, to make life worse. You just vanish. So, yeah, sick. It just goes right through you and doesn't stick. You've got energy. It just goes right through you, doesn't stick. You don't think, ah, I'm back to my normal self now. Just whether sickness or health, that is all part of samsara. It's not wrong to be sick. It's not wrong to be healthy or right to be healthy. You don't worry about these things. So you're sick and dying. You got cancer. Big deal. Or you're sort of about to sort of cark it. You've got all these other diseases. Big deal. Just body, that's all. You don't own this body. You don't own the disease. So what's the big problem? When you become like air, it just vanishes. The air can just flow so easily in and out. And it can fill whatever space. But people can piss on the air. It just doesn't wet the air. It just goes right through. It's a beautiful thing to be like the air. It's because you've got no solidity to you at all. You're already flowing. But it's also, there's nothing solid there. So you look upon your reputation, you look upon your achievements, what you've done, what you haven't done, it just fades into this mist, which has got no form. So you look at what you've done, who you are, you can't really put a name to it. Sometimes you look at those misty clouds, and sometimes people can see shapes in there. Sometimes people can see a boat, or they can see God, or they can see Jesus, or Kuan Yin, or whoever else you want to see, or Mr. Howard, or George Bush, I don't know, in that cloud formation. And you can see it's just mist. It's always changing, there's nothing there. You get in an aircraft, you fly straight through it, with no resistance. So whatever you're asked to do in this monastery, you're like the mist, no resistance. Whatever happens to you, beautiful things, desperate things, no resistance. You're disappearing, mate. And because you're disappearing, things don't tend to stick to you. You don't attach, they just pass straight through, and they don't leave any footprint or mark. As the mist flows through the trees, in the early mornings after the heavy rain, it doesn't bear the impression of the trees once it's passed through. It's just gone. It's left the past behind. It can flow around whatever obstacles in the future. It's got nothing there. The more you have, the more solid you are, the more bruises you will get when life passes through you. Or rather, you just come straight up against a tree and just bust your head against it. The more solid you are, the more there's a sense of self, me, possessions or whatever, the more bruises you have in life. So you fade away. There's nothing much left. I call liquid the stream winner. I call the mist the non-returner. And I call the arahat, not even mist left. Just nothing at all. Can't define, can't hold, can't see its traces. It's wonderful when they say the arahat in Parinibbana leaves no trace, no footprints in the sky are seen. It's a wonderful simile of the disappearance of what once was called a being, just a process of five khandhas, has now ceased once and for all. To me it's the most beautiful thing in the samsara, the disappearance of this mist into arahatship and then just completely gone. It's a sign of suffering ending, it's a sign of delusion evaporating, of no possessions, of taking renunciation to its ultimate end, renouncing even the renouncer, even the one who hears that word gets renounced, until nothing left at all. The mist just evaporates in the sunshine of the Dhamma. You can't see it ever again. Gone forever. All because we don't hold. Because we allow the Dhamma of peace and insight to develop, we become less easy to pin down. Less easy for a person to say, this is Ajahn Brahm, this is Ajahn Jayasiri, Ajahn Bhamani. You just vanish. Sure, they see the body, they hear the words, but there's nothing inside. And you understand there's nothing inside when there's no resistance. When there's no patiga sanya, the resistance perception. And then, it's never the world conflicts with you, never you conflict with the world, it's nothing to contend anymore. Everything just passes through, gone forever. So this is why we meditate. And the more you've disappeared, the more you'll have that peace, that freedom and that happiness. Happiness never comes from accumulation. Only suffering comes from accumulation. In the same way, the more work you have, the more burdens you have to carry, the more backache and neckache and headache you get. The less you have to carry, the more you skip through the day. Sometimes I look upon the younger monks in this monastery and think, what a wonderful opportunity you have. Nothing to do. And they'll look at you taking up burdens. And it's like a person walking on this journey, carrying these heavy rocks for no particular purpose. Think, what are you doing that for? Can't you just let those burdens go? Stop worrying so much. Stop contending so much. And if you can, you too will be able to skip. So light, so easy is a practice when you don't carry things around. You don't carry things around, no possessions, when the possessor starts to vanish. The two always go together. When there's a self, there's possessions of the self. When there's possessions of the self, that makes a self. So as you let go more and more of both your material possessions, as you let go more and more of your past and your future, your history and your fears and plans, as you let go more and more of all of your judgments of attainments or lack of them, judging this person or judging yourself, you vanish more and more the more you give up your possessions. And as this beautiful path develops more and more, you have very little left at all. The less you have, the more people respect you. Strange thing. As I said the other day, that's what I meant by the almost a safety mechanism in Labha Sakara Saloka, gain honour and fame. Of course, that doesn't always work. When honour is given to those truly deserving of honour, it doesn't touch them. Simply because they're honoured because there's no one there. Because there's no one there, the honour just doesn't stick. That's usually what happens, but not always. So understanding that, be one who can take the honour and fame of the world because you've disappeared and there's no one left. If you can do that, there's no worries at all. There's no one to do the worrying. That has to be the path. That is the path. That's the only way to liberation and freedom. Not the way of the world of accumulating things, accumulating experiences, attainments, possessions, but of letting everything go. Simplicity, renunciation is a way to freedom. Not freedom of desires, to get what you want. Interestingly, I saw that in an article in the Buddha Dhamma. I know I originated that saying. Of course, it could have been coincidence that the editor of that magazine also mentioned that. But it's more likely he's read it in my book or heard it from the talk or someone repeating it from one of my talks. The two freedoms in this world, the freedom of desire, which is to do whatever you want, to get whatever you want, to think whatever you want. So your desires have supremacy. It's a freedom of desire. But you all know from your experience, if not from experience, at least from inference, that's no freedom at all. Whether it's desire for beautiful, skillful things or not, or worldly things rather, it's no freedom. Real freedom is a freedom from desire. This thing inside of you which is always pulling you by the nose. You know, you are like a cow, and there's a ring through your nose, each one of you, and there's a string, and it's being pulled by Mara backwards and forwards. Beautiful girl comes through the monastery and it's pulling you. You're just like a cow, that's all. Pulled by the owner, the Mara. Someone says a stupid word to you and you get pulled the other way, the ring through your nose. Isn't it great to take out that ring and that leash so you're not controlled by what other people say or do? But you are free from desire. Just desire doesn't pull you and push you anymore. It's whatever someone says, whatever you see, it's just girl, boy, it's just sound, that's all. Someone says you're the most holy monk in a whole monastery, or you're the complete waste of time, they've been looking at you throughout this whole 3 months, and of all the monks in this monastery, you are the most retarded. They say that to you. Words, that's all. What do they know? So you just flow through you. Just don't stick. Whatever way you're someone who doesn't hold things. Non-attachment. You're disappearing. And that's what we're here for, to disappear. This range retreat is about to disappear. Only a couple of days left. You've got a couple of days to disappear too. So in these last 2 days, see how much can vanish. See if you can go from the solid element. Now, a fire element I never mentioned, that's usually lay people in the world. Really fiery, shouting at each other, having sex, going to raves, nightclubs, that's really on fire. But you may still have the solid element. Me! Look how hard I am. Go to the liquid element. Fit into any container. Your meditation retreat, you can fit into that perfectly. Have to drive the vehicle to take me to town, you can fit into the driver perfectly. No resistance. Time to sleep, you just sleep. Sweep, you just sweep. Go from that into the misty air element, where nothing can poke you, and go from that into complete disappearance, the fading away, till there's nothing left whatsoever. Aparisesa, without remainder, nibbana, cessation. 2 days to disappear. Plenty of time. End of the talk.
Sūpatthipanno bhagavato.